You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks, we are here to go back to the movies, and we are not afraid of no ghosts. So it is time for us to go into Ghostbusters, or a lot of people are calling it Ghostbusters 2016. It's a remake, it's a homage, it's something, and we're going to talk all about it. But we got a great crew here to talk with it, and speaking of great crews, of course, let me welcome my co-host, Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you, sir?
I am not afraid of any ghosts.
That's wow. Good.
Could not have said that any more awkwardly.
Yes, I was trying to do my Canadian accent there.
But this is good. I mean, yeah, it's been a while since we've done a movie review. We did the Tarzan, of course, but, there has been we've been spotty. We're about to do a lot of movie reviews. We're going to go see a lot of movies in the next month or so. And this is, starting off with this one, this is going to be pretty fun, I think.
Mm-hmm. As we'd like to say, reserve the middle seats for us.
Well, and we're going to talk a little bit about the controversy and all that, too, because this has been one of the most talked about movies, either plus or minus. And to be honest, I was not going to go see it, but because we're covering it for the show, I felt I owed it to our listeners, myself, to see this movie and talk about it. And I'm glad I did. So we're going to have a pretty interesting discussion, I think.
That is awesome. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we also have, with joining us, we have Van Jensen, and he's bringing a new friend, Pete Woods, into the Geek Seat this week.
Absolutely. It's always great to talk to Van, and he's got some projects out that are on stands now, comic projects. So we're glad to help him spread the word on these good things. So we'll get more into the in depth, but the main one we're going to talk about is Cryptocracy from Dark Horse, which features the art of Pete Woods, and I've enjoyed Pete's work since I think I saw him on when he was doing. He had a stint on Robin. The Tim Drake Robin back a long time ago now, and he's got good stuff. So it's a good looking book. It's a well written book. So I'm happy to help spread the word.
That is awesome. It's gonna be a lot of fun, and of course we want to hear from you guys. Please call us at 404-963-9057. Leave a message for us, and if we'd like it, we will play it up on the air. And with that being said, you could also write us at esopodcast@gmail.com. All right, let's get started with this week's rants and raves. All right, Mikey, what do you got for us?
Well, this is the week, man. Usually for geeks, nerds, fanboys, fangirls, et cetera, this is usually the highlight of the year. It's a big San Diego Comic-Con. Going into this year, I've noticed that the hype seems to me a bit muted, and it could just be me. I do know a lot of people that are going, but I know a lot of people who are not deciding to go this year, including myself, and I know that, Mike, you're not going this year either. And it's, obviously it's a huge investment to be able to go to this thing. But I also, Marvel and Disney, and I do believe Star Wars, Disney, all their entities are not going to have a big presence there. They've decided not to go really as well. And a lot of comic creators that I know are skipping this year. So I don't know if this year is now. San Diego's not the biggest convention in the United States or in North America. I think that goes to New York Comic Con now, as far as attendance goes.
Yeah, I think last year at San Diego was 130,000.
Yeah, and I think the New York got 150, 160, something like that. So now, obviously, San Diego now embraces it. The whole city does. So it spills out of the convention center. So if you add up all the people, maybe it's comparable as well. But in any case, now, of course, it's much more difficult to get tickets, even from the when you went last and you and I went last, which was only a couple years ago. It's really difficult to get tickets. It's, of course, really difficult to get lodging, not to mention so expensive. Has do you think San Diego's kind of peaked?
I'm kind of feeling that way because I know a lot of companies were pulling out from this year. And it's interesting because usually there's a ton of hype and for new products, new, you know, movies coming out, new TV shows, but we do get a lot of surprises still. And I'm sure over the next week, we will have a lot of surprises.
I hope so. I mean, there's always, yeah, there's always really cool moments, whether they're surprised or not. I mean, certainly there's announcements that a lot of companies make at San Diego. So it'll be interesting to see what those are, you know, but it's kind of like the past couple of years have been almost like the Super Bowl in the respect that sometimes a lot of companies the week before will start making announcements just to beat the rush or whatever. So you kind of lose that sense of wonder just because it already, you know, it doesn't take place during the event itself. I also think that, you know, like a lot Hollywood has learned the hard way that a hit or a spending a lot of money promoting something at San Diego doesn't necessarily mean anything as far as making it a hit at the box office. And so with that lesson learned, and I think the real big lesson for them was Scott Pilgrim, ever since then, they've kind of dialed it back. And now with Disney having their own events like Star Wars Celebration, and Disney does its own, sort of entertainment expo, that they announce a lot of things there. They save those announcements for those events. Then that's one of the major players of entertainment not being hugely present at San Diego. Now, obviously, Marvel's going to have a booth, and they'll be represented. I'm sure there'll be a couple panels, but it's not going to be a big, big, big presence.
Mm-hmm. It would be interesting to see who else, you know, they do. And we do have a ton of friends who are going to be at the con.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, just because we're not going and a lot of other people aren't going doesn't mean it's not going to be busy because I think it's still going to be about 130,000 like normal. So plus, and it's going to be crazy. And I definitely look forward to hearing reports from people who are going to be there. And, you know, as part of the con report, if you are at San Diego and you want to talk about your experience, we'd love to have you on the show. So please reach out to us because we really want to get a sort of floor level view of what goes on at San Diego this year, because we see all the hype and we see all the reports that are coming out of the press box. But the man on the street, the fan on the street interviews is what we like to see as well. You know, I'd love to have if anybody's in the small press area or an artist alley, any of our artist friends, if they want to come on and talk about their experience, if they're seeing, you know, a decline, it would be kind of interesting to get that viewpoint as well. And, you know, I think a lot of people are hopeful now that since Hollywood doesn't have a huge presence or seems to be backing off a little bit, then maybe, just maybe, it can return to be focused about more about comics like it used to be.
You mean San Diego will actually have a Comic-Con again?
Well, you know, it's stranger things have happened.
Wow. Riddle me that, Batman.
So, but you said something interesting on your Facebook page, which is why I can call you out on it because you did it publicly. But you said that, you know, unless you were doing something for the podcast or something in that respect, you probably don't see yourself ever going back
there. Nope, I do not.
So it's sort of like out of your system, or what is your turnoff now to San Diego?
Truthfully?
Yeah.
My turnoff to San Diego is the crowds. And if they're going to Hall H, is pure hell. And that's what H stands for, if you didn't know. Because it sits 6,400 people. But what San Diego does not do is they do not clear out the hall between panels. And so to get to see, say you wanted to go see the Doctor Who panel or the the Serenity reunion panel, or I'm just making these up, folks, or, you know, want to see the Avengers.
Obviously, you're living in a fantasy land.
Of course. But if you, the thing is, if you wanted to go see those panels, you have to get there almost 24 hours before it starts. And I'm sorry, no panel is worth that. I got, when I went, and this is some, what, 2011? And we got at out at Hall H at 6 a.m. to see an 11 a.m. thing with Matt Smith and Karen Gillan. And we waited in line and waited in line and waited in line, because if some people didn't leave, there was a good chance we would have not gotten in to see it. And sorry, if I'm going to be spending money to fly out to San Diego to stay at a hotel 50 miles away and then have to drive to the stadium to take the tram in to the convention itself, I want to get to be able to see the things I wanted to see. And don't even get me started on the crowds in the exhibit halls. It's amazing, and good for them for getting those type of crowds. But you have people going through there with strollers. You have people going there, through there taking selfies or taking pictures with the cosplayers right in the middle of a crowded walkway.
Can you imagine how it is right now with this Pokemon Go thing?
Oh, I don't even want to think about what Dragon Con is going to be like with Pokemon Go. Oh, don't. But no, and that's.
And you, and by the way, might I say, you really do sound like an angry old man right now.
I know, I do. But the thing is, I would go back to San Diego if the podcast becomes successful enough and they invite us to moderate, or if they invite us to, you know, have a panel on podcasting, because they do still have smaller panels in other parts of the convention center. So, you know, I would do that in a heartbeat. And, you know, I love San Diego itself. I love the Southern California. It's one of my favorite places on the face of the earth. But I just would not go back if to pay and say, hey, I'm going back to San Diego for the con. That's just not what I would do.
I have said that I don't think I would go to San Diego unless I was working it.
Right. If you said, hey, Mike, I need somebody to help work my table for me for San Diego, I would do it in a heartbeat because it would help you out.
Right. But also, I mean, you wouldn't have to worry about waiting in huge lines. You wouldn't have to, you know, you'd be there for a specific purpose rather than just sort of wandering around. And for all those people that say, oh, it's not really about comics and it's too bad, et cetera, et cetera. There's still a big comic presence there. I mean, setting up in small press, yes, our area was not as busy traffic-wise as, you know, the main, you know, video game and entertainment conglomerates were. But by the same token, we saw more people than I'd ever seen at any show, and we sold a lot of books. So, we didn't sell enough that made it economically worth it just because it is so expensive. But I would love to go back and try to sell some more books and try to do something where it's a little bit more balanced financially for me, because it is a great crowd. It's a great West Coast show. There are people who are passionate about comics, which is fun. And the vibe of the place is still it's still electric. You know, you still feel like you're part of something special. So that's a really cool thing. I mean, even though it may not be the number one Comic-Con in the country anymore, at least attendance wise, it still feels special. It is a special event. So, but as far as, you know, just going and hanging out, it's crazy. And, I think, you know, to sound like an old man as well, I mean, part of it is that, you know, we just don't have the patience for that sort of thing.
No, exactly. And
I mean, once you've done it, you're kind of like, okay, well, I've done that. I'd rather spend my money and do something else.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, actually. There is, you know, why not go to New York Comic Con to see what that's like, or Boston, or Toronto, or, you know, some of these other cons, you know, across the ocean.
And you can get that same vibe that you get at San Diego on a smaller level or in a different way at some of those conventions now too. I mean, it used to be that San Diego was a once in a lifetime experience. Now it's a special experience, but it's not as exclusive as it used to be. And now you can go to a lot of conventions and see a lot of stars and celebrities and companies that you hadn't seen before, that you couldn't see before. I mean, I think Chicago's coming up as well, and they've got Michael J. Fox and they're having a reunion, I think, of the Back to the Future folks. And it's like, that was something that you would think that would happen only at San Diego, but now it can happen in Chicago, it can happen in New York, it could happen in Philadelphia, it could happen in Cleveland. Well, maybe not Cleveland, but also we have the luxury of having a really fun con that is about half the size yet still feels really big, right in our own backyard.
Well, the thing is, the way Dragon Con is going, it's getting that big. You know, people are saying this year is probably going to be over 80,000.
It's possible.
So that's nothing to sneeze at, folks.
No. Not at all. But like, I definitely hope that everybody in San Diego this week has a awesome time, has a fun time, has a safe time. Certainly in this day and age, we don't want to take anything for granted. So please, I hope that everything goes well and there are no incidents over there.
And if anyone actually wants to feel free and donate some of those wonderful, rare pop figures that they're going to have there to the hosts of the show, we would really appreciate it.
Man, I took a look at the Indiana Jones ones and I was like, oh, that looks so awesome. And they're already like pre-selling them, I guess, on eBay for like $100 a piece or something. I'm like, you got to be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But So there's still a lot of power in the exclusivity, whatever, right, of course, of being at San Diego.
Sounded good to me.
Yeah, sure. I appreciate that. And like I said, if anybody out there is going to be at San Diego this weekend and wants to come on the show and talk about it, please reach out to us.
That sounds awesome. Definitely want to hear from you guys. ESOpodcast@gmail.com. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
We're here to tell you about our podcast, The Earth Station DCU. Join us every week as we discuss the DC universe.
We talk everything DC, including comics, television, the cinematic universe, and so much more.
We look forward to bringing you some great reviews and discussions.
And don't forget,
read more comics.
Hey everyone, welcome back. We are now here returning to the show with Van Jensen and bringing along with him Mr. Pete Woods. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely, Van. It's been too long since you've been on the station. And Pete, welcome to Earth Station 1.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Big fans of you guys. And of course, you guys got a new book that just hit this month from Dark Horse. It's called, and I'm going to try to do this once in the first take, Cryptocracy, correct?
Nailed it.
Bingo.
Is it me or is it hard to say?
I think it's you, Mike. Yeah, that's
right. It could be.
The funny thing is, like, pretty much everyone is like, ooh, I don't know how to say it. And then when they say it exactly right. So I think it's like intimidating, but I've never heard anyone pronounce it wrong.
I have heard a cryptocracy once.
Ooh, that's a good one. Cryptocracy.
Crypto crazy. No, just
I kind of wish we had called it Cryptocracy.
Well, tell us a little bit about the book. I mean, obviously, no spoilers for those people out there. But where did the idea come from?
The basic genesis of it, it was something where I think I just had seen like too many movies and TV shows where there's this like shadowy, all powerful entity that, you know, is controlling everything and manipulating everything, but they're just like, they're evil. And like, you never learn why they do what they do or what their real motivations are. They're just, you know, they're bad. And that's kind of all that you need. And so I just started thinking, like, well, you know, what if there was a reason for these people to try to control everything? And then, you know, how would they actually do this? And what would their agenda be? And then, you know, that kind of naturally leads to, like, oh, and what would be the thing that, that would scare them? So, and then Pete and I worked together on Green Lantern Godhead a few years ago, and I found out that he was super into conspiracies, and I very luckily roped him into going on this adventure with me.
Awesome. It is, and yes, you put a lot of thought into this. I mean, this is deep stuff. I mean, this is really well thought out. I mean, I'm not sure how much, how far you plan to take this, but just the first issue alone, it's a meaty first issue.
Yeah, I mean, it probably, if anything, is way more complicated than it needs to be, but I don't know. I mean, I think we just really got excited by the world and kind of the world building aspects of it. And yeah, I mean, there is a lot planned out, a lot of story, you know, for everything that's on the page, there's a ton that isn't. So yeah, I mean, we have, you know, just reams and reams and reams of stuff to explore. So hopefully we get to do that.
And Pete, dare I say it absolutely, it's gorgeous, gorgeous work.
Thank you. Thank you. I finally got a chance to break out the coloring tools and try out some new stuff. So
it does feel like this project here is dare I say it's more freeing for you than some of the work I've seen from certainly from DC.
Absolutely. I mean, when you're working for a big publisher on one of their characters or one of their books, there's an expected sort of style that you come at things with, and this, you know, this was our own, so we could come at it any way we wanted to. Thankfully, Van was open to what I was doing, because, you know, when you get a book like this with these sorts of themes, you expect something very dark and black and kind of muted colors, and I wanted to try a completely different take. And from what I've read, it seems to work, so, you know, I appreciate Van sticking with me and let me try something new and going outside the box, you know?
Well, it definitely seems like it's the right time for it. I mean, with this being an election year and things like the X-Files coming back and all that sort of thing, it does seem like this sort of story is one that people can jump onto. But again, like you guys both said, it is refreshing that it's not your, you know, typical men in suits, dark shadows, you know, very, very dark kind of book. I mean, there's a lot of, not only in the art is there a lot of color, but there's a lot of levity here.
Yeah, I mean, I think we just really wanted to kind of subvert expectations wherever we could. And I mean, I don't know, like, I'm not really interested in creating comics that are overly sort of dreary. So yeah, and you know, I think Pete too, in not just the color, but even in kind of looking at the material and pushing the voice of the book and pushing story elements, like, he's added so much stuff that's just so fun. So I think, you know, through and through, it's really a product of kind of, you know, both of our independent visions coming together into, you know, aligning in this one vision, which has been really cool.
Now, often we find out that truth is stranger than fiction. So I'm wondering if in your research to all these conspiracies and everything that you just saw some stuff that was like, yeah, no, that's even too far out there for what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of research for this, and there was this one, it was a guy who was at Georgia Tech. He's gone somewhere else now, but he was an academic who studies conspiracies, and he recommended a couple of really, like, deep cut books. And there's this one series called Apocalypse Culture. It's like I actually had to stop reading it. It was like, it was so crazy that, and the stuff in it was so insane that it was like it was poisoning my thoughts. And I just, like, I was like, all right, like, I need to tap out on this before, I don't know, like, I didn't know what was going to happen to me. It was just like, this does not end well with me going down this rabbit hole.
That's yeah, that is frightening. Because I would imagine that, yes, a lot of the people that, you know, come up with this stuff, it's kind of unhealthy.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we wanted to explore with the book, like the, you know, just like the psychology of why people believe conspiracies.
Excellent. And it is with Dark Horse, and the first issue, like I said, is out now. How is this a limited series? Is it monthly or...?
Planned as a monthly ongoing.
Nice. Nice. So yeah, there's a lot of, I imagine that we're only scratching the surface, and the first issue, like I said, seems pretty deep.
Yeah, that's the hope.
Evan brought a lot of depth to this thing that I'm, you know, I just don't have the knowledge base for, but Evan really thought this thing out. So we've got plans for a long time if people want to read it.
That's awesome. Awesome. And were there any sort of particular visual influences that you used, Pete?
You know, I started out looking at a lot of stuff, a lot of conspiracy-based stuff, and found that it's all been done. You know, there people have taken that sort of stuff and integrated it a bit in all anything slightly related to conspiracies and things like that. So honestly, in a way it was inspiring because I wanted to just run in a different direction than all of that stuff. So I guess that would be my influence, is not trying to be influenced, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And of course I have to, you know, give you both props. I mean, it's got talking animals in it. So that's awesome.
That's Van all the way.
Well, but P gets credit. Like I hear from so many people who really like the grays, the little alien dudes, well, quote unquote alien dudes who are, you know, chowing down on junk food. And that was just Pete who was like, I think it'd be really funny if these guys like junk food. And there's actually like this whole backstory behind it, which was just an amazing addition.
That is cool. The like I said, the issue is out now, and we're going to now prepare Pete for the geek seat. I know, Van, you've already suffered through this once before. So
I'm a survivor.
Yes, but while we're strapping Pete in there, I did want to, you know, you've got another book that just hit the stands as well, and I just wanted to real quick let you give a plug for the $6 Million Man series you've got going on.
Yeah, so I'm doing a new $6 Million Man. The first story arc is called The Fall of Man. Ron Salas on art from Dynamite. First issue is out a week ago, I think. And yeah, it's basically a really big, weird story, kind of about genetic engineering and robots and the advent of the internet age. It's set in 1979. And every issue kind of gets progressively weirder. Issue 3 is 22 pages that are all one panel, wow, which will make sense once people see it, I think.
Well, that's good. And it is a continuation from where the TV series left off?
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
Cool. So when you can watch it, every time you start reading it, you'll hear...
Exactly. Yeah, that was... Like I'm a little too young to have caught the series on the first run through. So the editors, they were like, you know, after the fact, kind of like, hey, we need to get the sound effect in there. And it was like, oh yeah, I totally blanked on this, you know, key iconic thing. So, you know, youthful naivete.
The youth of today.
I know, right? I mean, I grew up with
I used to run around
action figure. Yeah. Exactly.
See, you know,
run down the street. Doing
this
that.
Is why Pete is the good victim for the geek seat this week. Uh-oh. All right, Mr. Mike, tie him up.
He's tied, man. We're good.
All right, Pete,
he's ready to go.
You ready for your first question?
Yeah, go for it.
What was your favorite geek out moment?
You know, I guess my favorite geek out moment is a recent moment. It was sitting in the theater at Force Awakens, and seeing my daughter and my wife have a character finally in Star Wars that they felt a connection to the same way I felt a connection to those characters when I was a kid, you know, when Rey, when that lightsaber flew into Rey's hands, and suddenly, you know, they could be Jedi too. And that was, I think, my favorite geek out moment of recent times.
That is awesome.
That is awesome. Yeah.
Yes. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
God, the prequels.
Number one answer.
That's our number one answer.
It's true. It's true, man. Sitting in the in that theater and hearing about the Immaculate Conception, we all just laughed out loud, and it was disappointing.
I don't know who his father is.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, so you're that kind of
lady.
It
was coarse and irritating, I'll tell you that much.
What geeks you out the most?
Seeing people come together over their, you know, people that wouldn't normally know each other, people that wouldn't normally have a connection, coming together over something, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. I mean, it could be any property, Doctor Who, Star Wars, Star Trek. It's seeing people find a connection that they wouldn't have found otherwise.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What turns your geek off?
People, purity tests, fanboy, fangirl purity tests, you know, the ones that where, you know, you got to answer certain questions or you're not really a fan. That turns my geek off really fast.
Yeah.
Not like questions like this, of course.
No, not at all.
No, of course not.
No, it would nothing be like this. Come on. We're above it all.
These aren't purity tests. These are just, well, maybe they are. Maybe you guys are going to burn me when this is all done. I don't know.
Oh, you have no idea what's to come. What fictional character do you like to meet the most?
When I was growing up, middle school years, my parents were getting divorced. I was pretty alone, I found a connection in Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
I found, you know, it was, I could understand the humor. I felt like it was smart enough that I felt a connection to it. And so, you know, it helped me through some tough times. So I think the person I'd like most to meet, it would be the Doctor. Doesn't matter which one, although I think I'd prefer either Tom Baker or Matt Smith.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Oh, God. That's a good question. Donald Trump?
Well, that is a true fictional character if I ever saw it. That's
fictional. I guess Cthulhu would be the one I'd like to meet the least because I'd rather not die in madness. So, yeah. Although it would be interesting to learn a few things before my mind
popped
off into the void. Yes.
Popped. Yes.
What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Oh, good question. Jelly baby? I don't know. You know, that's a good question. I don't have an answer for that one other than, you know, have a jelly baby or allons-y.
Yeah, that
so,
works.
Hello, sweetie.
Exactly. There you go. That's a great one. Mm-hmm.
No, I didn't mean that towards you, though.
I was getting excited there first.
I know. There he goes. Coming on to the guests.
You know, I am the Captain Jack of this podcast. What can I say? Wait, no, that's Darren. Never mind. What is your ideal geek occupation?
You know, I know there's a lot of hate directed towards steampunk, but I wouldn't mind being a turn of the century, and you know, steampunk interdimensional traveler. How's that sound?
Okay.
That sounds awesome.
That sounds pretty darn awesome. Can we join along?
I'm just grabbing my time traveling trousers.
Excellent. I got a vortex manipulator here, so it's
there you go.
What geek occupation would you not like to do?
Bantha cleanup, probably.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, you need a big shovel.
Oh, ouch. Yeah, I could definitely see that, and I'd hate to see the, you know, refuge pile or such. talk about, you know, putting stuff in your garden. Oof. All right, you ready for your final question, sir?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, Pete, what is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Are we going for the PG version?
We try to keep somewhat family friendly, but you know, you could have fun with it.
You know, sometimes it's cool just to think there's a couple of things that that get me through, you know, when I need some creative calmness or something. I imagine like what it must be like to be Superman sitting on the surface of the moon looking down on Earth and just taking it all in, or, you know, sitting on the bridge of the Next Generation Enterprise as they, you know, cruise through uncharted territory.
Oh, sure.
Any of those things, you know, basically exploring the unknown is what I, you know, anything that taps into that is just, it excites me.
To boldly go where no one has gone before?
Exactly.
Okay. Gee, we're not doing any cliches on this show this week. Well, Pete, congratulations. You are now in the category with Van. You've made it through the Geek Seat.
Woo-hoo. Thank you, guys.
Congratulations.
Can I get these snaps taken off?
No.
Oh,
Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
He has won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $2,600.04.
But only on the station.
Kind of, yeah.
Kind of like Downtown Disney.
Well, yeah, the value decreases the minute you leave the station. And right now our ESO stock, for some reason, is up, probably because we have these fine gentlemen.
Exactly. You know, our stock rises with these guys on the station.
Absolutely. Awesome, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining us again. Cryptocracy, number one, is on stands now. And where can – are you guys doing the San Diego thing this weekend?
No. Yeah, we're both like,
that's why they're smiling. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Whenever anyone asks me if I'm going, I just like, you know, giggle and pump my fist and, you know, go and hide under my bed or something. It's,
do you, both of you guys do conventions. You guys got something coming up soon?
I think I'm actually done for the year. I had so much travel that I was, and just so many writing projects, so I'm sort of tapping out of the convention circuit for the year.
I'm going to be at Rose City in Portland and Jet City in Tacoma this year, since they're fairly local.
Awesome. Well, and certainly we'll have in our show notes, we'll have links to where people can find you online. Is there a website for the book already?
I think just through Dark Horse, darkhorse.com.
Okay. And we'll have that link as well as links to your own personal site. So thank you guys again for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Let's take a break and we'll be back with our review of Ghostbusters.
It will haunt you every night. Whatever it is, no one should have to encounter that kind of evil. Except you girls. I think you can handle it.
Oh, all good. Hey. Thanks.
We have a gift. We see what no one else is willing to see. We do things others can't do.
Ghostbusters.
If there's a paranormal problem, we're the ones to answer the call.
Hello.
That is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
What do we think of these Ghostbusters? Are they to be taken seriously?
You take that out! Take the far one.
Okay, you sweaty freaks. I'm about to save you from this. Go! Ah!
Okay, so I don't know if it was a race thing or a lady thing, but I'm mad as hell.
There's a bigger picture at hand here.
Someone is creating a device that amplifies paranormal activity.
We're gonna need a bigger boat.
Hey, guys, check it out.
Kevin, come inside.
I was born to be a Ghostbuster, all right?
Oh, man, that's so not good.
Something big is going to happen.
The word we're looking for is apocalypse.
Are you rampaging this? Yeah!
The government's trying to claim the event isn't supernatural.
We don't want a panic. We don't want mass hysteria.
Get out of the city! Get out of the city! I will kick the unliving crap out of you! And you, especially you! Patty! Don't move!
You got a,
No, I'm tired.
No, listen.
I'm just gonna go ahead and take off. How about that?
I don't really think that's a good idea.
Nope. Going to take off. Don't piss off the ghost. Really?
Everyone, now it's time for our main topic, and we are here to talk all about the new Ghostbusters. As we mentioned at the beginning of the show, if you haven't seen it, we are going to spoil the heck out of it. And if you have seen it, we're still going to spoil the heck out of it. So let's get it started, and welcome, of course, our movie people. Alex, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's so good to be back.
Good to have you back, sir. Yeah. And, of course, the lovely Ashley Pauls. How are you, dear?
Good. Thank you so much for having me back. It's always fun to come on here and talk about movies.
Oh, it seems like it's been a little while. There's been a little bit of gap in with the movie situation, I think, this year.
Well,
so,
no, Mike, remember, we didn't invite them for Tarzan.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true. Well, or we did, but they just opted out.
Yeah, they weren't. Tarzan wasn't worth either reviews. That's it.
I guess so.
But, did this just get put on us? Is that what happened?
It's our fault now, Alex.
Oh, okay. It's all our fault. Oh, as long as we know. All right.
Welcome to our world.
We kind of got into it when we did our box office review, although I think it's just since we did the preview episode, I think it's just got even more and more divisive in terms of this is the most controversial movie of the summer, even of the year, right?
Well, it depends on who you ask.
I'm just saying in general.
I think going into this, there was very much a you're on one side or the other, which seemed a little odd because I don't know if anybody paid attention, but it's a movie about busting ghosts. And I'm not sure that we needed to have sort of this Malcolm X-ian kind of division when talking about a movie about busting ghosts.
Well, I think, though, that was and before we get into the meat of the review, talking about the feelings behind it, I do think it became sort of a banner movie for – I don't want to say women's rights, but for women to be presented in a starring box office role.
I thought all the female characters were very strong and very believable, though.
I think, you know, as far as it was really important for, and not just in the geek community. I was at my day job and talking with coworkers about, oh, what are you going to do this weekend and whatnot? And I said, I'm probably going to see Ghostbusters on Saturday. And this woman, she's a little younger than I am. She said, oh, I have to see that because girl power. And she said, is anybody else going to see that? And a guy in the room said, he's like, well, I'll give you some money. You can buy my ticket. It doesn't look like something I want to see, but I want to support it. And this is just people not in the geek community. So that told me like a huge message that this is beyond a movie about just busting ghosts. This is an important movie, an important movement.
I think that's kind of what a lot of media has wanted it to be. I actually had a coworker who went the opposite direction. Yahoo Movies has been doing their best to make sure that everybody hates this film. And they posted the one negative review that I've been able to find of the film. And a friend of mine, a coworker, sat there and said, oh, good, the movie stinks. I don't have to watch it now. And I went, really? Because like you haven't seen anything about it.
Right.
You read one review that said, as a male, I don't like this film. And he's like, I'm on board. And that scares me, actually. That's now that I'm thinking about it. Now that I've said it out loud, it concerns me.
Yeah.
It's been amazing.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's been amazing to see the backlash still continuing. I was on Reddit today and I saw a Ghostbusters article and I was going down the comments and there's just so much like negativity and hate. And I thought, you know what, this is just a movie and this is even from people who haven't even seen it yet. So it's just kind of scary in some ways how this just kind of blew up and it became a discussion. And really it's meant just to be a fun movie and kind of scary some of the things it has actually brought to the surface.
Yeah, I've read, you know, interviews with Paul Feig and some of the cast members and whatnot. And they just want to make a fun movie. And there's this weight on this movie that maybe, you know, by the time it's released on Blu-ray or whatever, or, you know, it'll go away and it can get out of this weight and sort of exist on its own. Let's hope, because, you know, for, I don't, you know, we obviously don't know how each other feels about it, but, you know, it's not by any means, it's not like the worst movie ever. I mean, it's quite enjoyable.
Well, the big thing for me is that, again, this is one of those cases where we haven't seen such bile and hatred slung at a movie since March, with Batman versus Superman before it came out. And then people saw it, and then they decided, you know, whether or not they were right to be angry or right to not be angry. And, you know, I get that you know, those in the geek community who have a strong tie to a film are going to embrace it. There was, you know, I've been very vocal about my not believing that the first three Star Wars movies, 1, 2, and 3, actually exist. That's how I live my life. But having said that, when Dan Aykroyd, who was in Ghostbusters, is getting death threats in comments because he came out and said, "I liked the finished product."
Of course he did. He was the producer.
Well, yeah, but, you know, regardless, what are you going to say? If you're in the movie and if you've done the original, if you're a member of the original cast and you come out and say, "This movie is a good time at the movies," and the fan collective is like, "How much is Sony paying you?" Well, then now you've just got a problem. And I think for me, that's just that I just shake my head at that point. It's amazing how much my life is different now that I no longer read the comments.
A lot of us, and myself, really, I'll include myself in this, were skeptical just because I don't like the idea of reboots and remakes when it's not necessary, mm-hmm. when a continuation would do. And I'm a big fan of continuations. The fact that they were doing a hard reboot on this, I mean, maybe soft actually is the word for it, because we'll talk about it, but eventually. But I think there's a lot of important stuff here. And the fact that, you know, reading about the making of this movie, I mean, they had whatever it was, 25 years to make a third Ghostbusters movie with the original cast, mm-hmm. and personalities collided, and it just was never going to happen. It was never going to happen.
You know, Mike, though, there technically was a third Ghostbusters with the original cast in it. It was called the Ghostbusters video game, which they did.
Right.
Which was a much better story than the second movie.
Well, watching paint dry was a better story than the second movie.
And that may be true, but I'm talking about the actual film, you know, where, you know, collectively, you know, they couldn't move the franchise further. They just couldn't because of the personality clashes. And then with one of the main, not only just the cast member, but one of the co-creators of the concept passing away, it just, you know, and once they decided to reboot, it was funny how, you know, particularly Bill Murray, well, in particular, Bill Murray, who went for 20 some years without, you know, wanting to be any part of it. Once it was announced and made the decision that it was going to be a reboot, he pretty much signed on board right away.
Mm-hmm.
And with his endorsement, came, you know, the rest of it. And, I also understand Paul's, you know, when remaking this, you know, if you're going to do a reboot and you have four characters and you're going to play the same four characters again, and you've got to cast them, if you cast them like all males, I mean, that's a big cloud to try to get under. And those are big, you know, boots to fill. And I sort of applaud him for kind of thinking outside the box. And this is not an unusual thing for him, because he pretty much, I mean, Paul pretty much made his like big spark in the movies with having what was thought of as a, you know, female version of The Hangover.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's applauded, women in central characters, in important characters in movies. And I think, you know, with that in mind, I think it was not a bad move. And now, after seeing the product, I concur that it wasn't a bad move.
Mm-mm. Definitely. And let's start getting into the movie itself.
Come.
All right. You got to first off throw out what you know about the old movies. You think of this as an alternate universe.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't throw it out completely because this movie plays homage to it so much.
Oh, very well. And we'll talk about cameos. We'll talk about surprises and such. And it was
music cues.
Oh, God,
I mean, they're all right.
Well,
there.
I'll start off right at the very beginning, the opening scene in the mansion.
Mm-hmm.
When the ghosts appeared and the guy went down to the basement, you know, when he was being attacked and they went, I had a grin on my face ear to ear because it was awesome. That was, I think, one of my favorite scenes and the last time I smiled ear to ear during that movie. There was other lot of grins, a lot of thumbs up and such, yeah. But that was my ear to ear grin moment.
I think in that opening scene, my favorite thing is he tells the spooky story and then the candle falls over. The candlestick falls over. And we're all suckered in. We're all brought in. It's going, oh, okay, we're about to have the ghost sighting. And then he picks up the candlestick and you can actually see him use the remote control, which flips the bar on it to knock it over. And it's like, oh, he did that to set up everybody else. Ha ha ha. Bam, ghost. And I actually liked the way that whole scene plays out.
Oh, I did too.
It was really well done. And then, of course, going into the whole thing with the stairs crumbling and the slime coming up from the ground. It's all really well done.
And it's really kind of frightening too. I mean, this movie has it has an edge to it that I didn't expect. I thought it was all going to be gags and laughs, but there's some really creepy moments in this movie.
Oh, very much so. And even, you know, the subway scene was mm-hmm. pretty awesome. But some of the scenes, and it was funny as heck, though, when the one professor was, you know, reviewing Kristen Wiig's, you know, character and everything, you know, oh, you're up for, you know, renewal.
The tenure.
The tenure, yep. And everything. And it was like, Judy whispered to me, the last time we saw him, he got killed on the toilet in Game of Thrones.
Wow.
So that's how that movie went for me, basically. But yeah, and then I love that scene, though, when they finally meet the ghost at the mansion and she goes, ghosts are real. And it turned out on YouTube.
Yes. Always watch when you're being recorded. That first scene where they're talking about tenure is an important moment in the movie because it gives us our first cameo appearance.
Yes.
Yeah. And the Harold Ramis bust that's exactly. Right out her office. And I love that because he's looking at the camera and he's smiling. And it's there's such a fourth wall breaking right there because here's Kristen Wiig. And it's clear that she's going to play the straight person in this film, which I guess you have to do if you're playing opposite Melissa McCarthy. Because Melissa is just such a dynamic comedian. And, you know, here she is and she's trying to get her place and make sure that she's there and make sure that she's entrenched in her job. And right outside her door is the bust of Harold Ramis with the goofiest grin on his face, almost looking to the audience and going, yep, I made it in the movie. For me, that was awesome. 'Cause I saw it. I immediately started clapping, for a scene where a guy walked out of a room and it confused everybody else in the theater, but I don't care. It was great.
No, I was like, oh, Egon.
Yes.
It definitely sets up too that there may be four of them, but these are different characters than
very much. Yeah.
Because, you know, we don't, in the original Ghostbusters series, it might've been Dan and Harold's baby, but Bill stole the show. I mean, it was Bill's movie. And we don't have anybody like that, character-wise, in this movie. There's nobody that's like really over the top. Brett's really just, you know, the man in charge, so to speak. So it's an interesting choice to have the two main characters be Kristen and Melissa. And I know that Melissa can play over the top and extreme, but I thought she was very much reserved in this movie.
Oh, I thought I was thinking I was very so that also. That. Very yeah. much so.
Yeah. Well, I thought she was really just, after it was over, I was like, man, I'm surprised that she didn't steal every scene.
And it's interesting because the role that was originally written for Melissa McCarthy was Patty.
Yes. Yes. I did read that as well.
So, which means that a lot of the over the topness that we would have seen from Melissa went to Leslie Jones.
Yeah, but she did such a great job and too.
She was great. Mm-hmm. I actually feel, in my opinion, that they held her back a little bit. Like, I want to see the sizzle tape. I want to see the sizzle reel. Because you know that Leslie Jones, when given the opportunity, will go off like a rocket.
Sure, sure.
And that, to me, I feel like is going to be something that might be worth picking up the Blu-ray by itself.
And go ahead.
I was going to say, I have a feeling that somewhere out there is an R-rated cut where they just let four women just totally cut loose. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get that on the Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
That I, you know, since, like I said, the original two movies certainly are like, you know, like Bill just shines, almost outshines everybody in some ways, in a lot of moments. Here they made a conscious decision to make sure that the actresses like Melissa and like Leslie that can be, you know, out there are a little bit more held back. And then that allows Kristen and certainly Kate, who was like the real big dark horse in this movie.
Yes.
Just outstandingly shine. I mean, Kate stole the show. Like, I did not expect much of her coming into this.
Yeah.
But afterwards, I was completely in love with her.
Yeah.
And completely in love with that character.
Yeah. That character, in my opinion, is probably one of the most well-rounded, especially when you consider the fact that we don't learn a whole lot about her. In the film, except through her mannerisms and the way she's clearly on edge. She is clearly over the top, but she's an engineer, and that's just the way that her mind works. One of the things I loved about this movie is that, in comparison to the original, is that we got the proton packs in the first one. That's great. Done. Second movie comes out, we still have proton packs. This movie was updating the proton packs throughout the film. Yes. And then giving us extra weaponry at the end.
Yep.
Because that's the way that her mind was working. It's like, okay, I've made this. Now I need to make this.
Yeah, she's not stopping. She just continues to improve and tweak and come up with ideas.
Which makes her character so crucial to the rest of the movie.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I agree with that one. I liked her character a lot. She was the most fascinating of the characters to me.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was like, okay, what is she going to come up with next? Because she almost seemed like she was inventing on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And she was doing a great, great job at it. And that was a lot of the fun. The one thing William brought up that he wanted me to talk about is, were they killing the ghosts, basically, or destroying their corporal, you know, spirits? Because they weren't in, like, that big battle. They were not capturing the ghosts. Mm-mm.
No, they were not.
No. That's a good question. We don't really get an answer to that, so we don't really know. But the idea at the beginning is to capture them.
Oh yeah,
at least one. They want to capture one, so that's why they don't have the big containment unit.
But they do get that at the end,
apparently. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Without the warning devices.
Yes.
No, it was good, and I liked the chemistry between the four of them. It worked really well.
I thought it was okay. I mean, I wasn't completely – I don't know. There was something missing for me. I don't know what it was. But I think also the script is not as smart as at least the 84 one. But then again, I don't know. I don't. It's tough to say because I don't know. I have never read the original 84 script. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that was probably improv, and Bill probably did added a lot to his stuff.
Well, the script was actually changed quite a bit also because Bill Murray's role was for John Belushi originally.
Right. Yeah. So I can't compare, but I do know that, coming out of this one, as good as, you know, as fun as it was, it didn't quite reach that like really awesome, great level for me. And because there's, you know, that, and I hate to keep comparing, but the 84 one has so many classic scenes, so many classic moments. I didn't really come out of this movie with any catchphrases or scenes that I thought that's like the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually in your camp, Mike.
Which Mike?
The one that's actually the smarter of the two.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah. Well, this might be his last performance, depending on who he agrees with.
I agree with the Mike that said that it was good but not great. I had a good time at it. My wife and I both, we were coming out, we were saying that we smiled throughout the entire film.
Yes.
But there were not moments when we were laughing hard. Or really even out loud. We were like, oh, well, that's cute. That's
exactly.
And I think I know the reason why I felt like it was – the movie feels restrained.
Yeah, it's like they held the brakes on for some reason. Mm-hmm,
yeah, or they were at least driving while having their foot on the brake. And the reason for that is because Paul Feig is an R-rated guy. His best movies, Spy, The Heat, Bridesmaids, they're R-rated films. They don't necessarily get in with, you know, with the language, but they get in with the situations. And you're not allowed to really let loose on this film. There is one scene that I think is absolutely laugh out loud hysterical because it's an absolute commentary on Hollywood itself. And that's the job interview scene with Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, Kevin.
Yes, with good old Kevin. In which he's the dumb assistant that you see in every male dominated movie.
Yes. Yeah. It's a nice flip on that.
Go ahead and flip it. But that moment when he rubs his eyes while his glasses are on.
Oh, that was funny as hell.
Because it just comes out of nowhere. And they're like, wait a minute. Are your glasses? Yeah. I don't like them.
I couldn't itch my eye.
Oh, it had to be.
It was improv because he was wearing regular glasses, but they were getting some reflection on it.
Oh,
and so they took the lenses out, and during one of the takes, Chris just kind of put his finger up there, and instead of like going cut or whatever, they just went with it. And yeah.
Nice.
And that was a good moment.
That scene with him trying to answer the phone while it was in the aquarium. It's in the background. It's not even a main thing, and you see him trying to touch it. And hitting the glass. It was just a moment for Hemsworth. Hemsworth played that so well that I actually wonder if he's a moron.
I thought that he was a really good sport for that role, and I thought it was kind of funny. Like you said, the role reversal, and I thought he did a good job of just kind of playing the dim-witted assistant.
Yeah. So I thought that was good, but for the most part, the movie felt like it was holding itself back. Like I feel like everybody in that movie just wanted to just blow up huge. And I think I said even on the summer preview that I thought this was an opportunity for Leslie Jones to have an Eddie Murphy breakout moment. And she didn't. In this film, which disappointed me. I do like The Power of Patty Compels You, though. That was a great line. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the only one that I'm going to quote from the movie.
Oh, I love the scene, though, when she had the ghost on her shoulders and the people mm-hmm. took the selfie.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And certainly the scene where Melissa gets, like, possessed was a chance for them to really go all out. And instead, she even gets more restrained.
Yeah.
And I know it suits the plot of the movie, but it's not as fun.
Right.
And I think that's That's what it was for me. Plus, as good as it was to see the cameos, I didn't care for them so much, and I really didn't like the Bill Murray stuff, and that shocked me. But I just didn't care for that at all.
Bill Murray's character was either not
developed. I kept waiting
for
there to be like a something, like a twist or something else on it, and it just fell flat to me.
There needed to be either more development or less character overall.
If he had shown up, his character had shown up as a ghost at the end, that might have been something interesting, but they didn't go that far with it. Even that seemed restrained.
Right.
It would be interesting, though. The Ernie Hudson one I predicted right at the beginning when she that was fairly straightforward. The two of the four surprised me, and there was a fifth one that I was actually very pleased to see.
Toward the end?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And we'll talk about that, and it wasn't Slimer.
No.
You know Slimer's got to be in it. You know the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man's got to be in it. You know, like, so... I like the use of Slimer in this, especially giving him a wife. I don't know if anything else he's ever had that before. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah, I'd never seen that before, so that was enjoyable.
And the stuff with the car and all that, I thought was great. I didn't think the Stay Puft Marshmallow thing was necessary, but I get it. But it didn't seem relevant.
Right. I liked it after as they were going through all of those different floats. And then there was Stay Puft, and I was like, "Oh, Stay Puft, awesome!"
It was just odd because the rest of them had this like sort of Tim Burton feel to them, and and really creepy. And then it was like Stay Puft, and I'm like, "Oh, okay."
It felt a lot as Stay Puft from the Ghostbusters cartoon, more than the Stay Puft from the first Ghostbusters movie.
Gotcha. I've only seen the first two movies, so. I think the cameos that I did really like, the Harold Ramis bust at the beginning was great. And it sets the tone. It's like, this is going to happen now. So, I didn't care for the Bill Murray one. I did, the Aykroyd one was okay.
The Aykroyd one actually seemed like that could have been actually, Ray from the movie.
Maybe. I love seeing Annie Potts again, though.
I barely recognized her.
And then, of course, Sigourney at the end was... I totally forgot. Like, I just... I wasn't expecting that at all because I was like, oh, yeah! Sigourney, of course. No Ramis, but I guess they couldn't.
No, well, they couldn't call him out of retirement because he hasn't been doing anything for almost 15 years.
I guess not. Yeah.
I didn't call the Ernie Hudson one. I should have, but I didn't. I just didn't even think that they'd bring him into the film. The greatness about the Dan Aykroyd one is that, Kristen Wiig's trying to get downtown and he has a cab driver. He's just like, no, I'm not really interested in going that way. And she's like, do you not see these ghosts? And he's like, yeah, but they're just class five apparitions. And it's a total normal conversation between the two of them. And at no point in time does she go, wait a minute, you're a cab driver. How do you know that those are class five?
Right.
And I love the fact that, because that whole scene is just played off more along the lines of a cab driver who doesn't want to go that direction.
Yeah,
exactly. Because
it's just too far to drive.
I think it was the I ain't afraid of no ghost line at the end that I just grimaced at a little bit. Like, you'd see when you went too far with it there.
Yeah. It was interesting. The Sigourney one was awesome.
Yeah.
Yes. That one took me by surprise and I enjoyed it.
I was like in the same boat. I was like, oh, yeah, Sigourney.
But then again, I was loving everything Kate McKinnon was doing anyway. So just that scene with them was just so fun.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it was, I did like the final scene and they set up for the next movie already.
The bumper at the end. Yes. Yeah.
I could have done.
Well, who knows if they'll really go through with that, if they do a sequel, but I think just putting it in there was kind of fun.
It was a nice touch. And again, it's that last little homage that you needed for the thing. I think at one point Tally and I were kind of leaning over talking during the movie, like you're not supposed to. And I think we mentioned something about, hey, it would have been cool to see one of the dogs show up.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I think as far as the cameos and homages go, I think we were pretty happy with what we got. Bill Murray role was just not very strong.
No.
What did you guys feel about? Because I saw a little bit of heat about this too, and I'm not sure how I feel about it actually. But what do you feel about the logo actually being like a ghost thing, like a character in this?
I honestly don't know that I have an opinion on it. They went back to they. One of the minor faults that I have about this film is that they did a little too much to keep it connected with the first film.
Right.
Instead of just being out on their own.
Well, so, at least they didn't go with one of Kevin's logos.
I don't know. That hot dog with the house. It could have been a ghost with the hot dog. I thought that was really great. Or the 7-1-1.
7-1-1.
Yeah. It's sad that in a movie where it's all about, you know, the switching of genders and all of that stuff, that one of the better characters was the male. Anyway, I think they could have gotten a little bit more away from the basic flow of the first film, and then all of a sudden we have to have something very cute and friendly looking turn into like the big evil. And so having the logo suddenly turn into an evil monster was a little over the top. But again, you then turn around and you have Patty screaming, you know, we said cute and friendly. We said cute and friendly. You're not being cute and friendly. was a nice touch.
It was interesting because William pointed out to me, you know, when he started growing and started looking really big, he said, that's Oogie Boogie.
It did kind of give it. Yeah, so I was thinking that too. He's like, yeah, because he started getting a little dirty and
yeah. and bag-like. And I wonder, considering the fact that you had that and you had moments in which, you know, all of the balloon floats had that same Burton vibe, I wonder if somebody behind the scenes has got a connection with Burton in the past somewhere.
That's a good possibility. I did like a look of all the ghosts.
Yes, I thought the special effects on the ghost were was really good.
The CGI on this one was really, really well done. I would have liked to have seen more practical mixed in, but I can't deny that the effects that were done in this film, especially the CGI, especially the way the ghosts look, just weren't fantastic.
Oh, the ghosts, especially when they were in Times Square, they looked amazing.
Yeah.
I can't complain about that at all. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was good. I liked the convict who had gone through the electric chair. And yes. I even liked the one at the mansion at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, you're not going to see any complaints until they went to the friendly, happy Casper, the friendly ghost looking thing. Yeah. Actually, that's who he looks like. One of the three brothers.
Yeah.
I liked also the spin that they did with, because certainly in the first movie, there's a bunch of skeptics out there, and actually the mayor's office and the government or whatever is against them. And I did like the fact that, yes, they were kind of opposition at times. They end up being like, you know, they end up supporting them, even, you know, when they should have gone down for murder. the mayor and everything is just like, yeah, we know you're good. You're good guys. You're good girls.
Whatever. Oh, talk about wasted character with the mayor, with Andy Garcia.
Garcia role, I think, was a little bit odd. Yes. I think he could have put anybody in that spot and they'd still have been fine.
And the thing with the assistant instead of being, you know, a male character in the first two, it was the female, like, you know, we thank you guys for doing it, but we're going to make you look bad.
Yeah, we have to fake arrest you now.
Yeah. But that was better than having, you know, like, in, like, they didn't really copy the first one. And it's, we've seen it, you know, cliche time and time again, where there's a government figure that's like, we're going to shut you down and be the bad guy. And they didn't do that here. They just let, really, they let, I can't think of his name now, but they let the bad guy be the bad guy.
Exactly.
I had wanted to bring up is what you guys kind of thought of the villain in general. I kind of personally thought he wasn't quite as memorable as kind of like the evil forces set up in the first Ghostbusters where they end up possessing the people. Kind of what did you guys think of the villain?
He reminded me completely of Peter McNichol. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
He kind of did, but I do know also that, and this is from, you know, I think reading a little bit of interview, a lot of interviews with Paul Feig and trying to get inside his head. He has a, and I'm not sure how much it's in his other movies, but he detests bullies. And I think you'll find that a lot of characters in his movies, and almost all the characters in this one, are suffer from being bullied, and it's what they do with that experience that kind of shapes them, and so they're all kind of, you know, losers in some ways. They've all been, you know, they're whether they've got the ghost girl name or you know, whether they've been labeled a freak or whatever, that society hasn't been kind to them. So some of them obviously overcome that and become good people, and some of them don't. And I think that, you know, that's a Paul Feig thing, a staple, I think. So that's where that's coming from. And I don't know if we'll see that, you know, again, but I think that's how that played out. And was it satisfying? I mean, look, reading about it, it's just kind of like, okay, I get it. But yeah, there was never a point where, I mean, in order for him to become threatening, we had to put, you know, he had to be in Christopher's body, you know? He had to be in Chris Hemsworth's body. And even that, he was threatening for a little bit, but, and then, you know, he turned into a special effect, so.
Yeah.
But he had a great dance number, you know?
okay. Neil Casey is the actor who played that role, and I have a feeling that his connections – got him that part. He's a writer for Saturday Night Live. So in this case, you know, the way they built it, he was not a character that you really up until he becomes he possesses Chris Hemsworth. I don't think they really do a whole lot with him to make him stand out. And part of that is intentional. But I, you know, it's we've seen stronger villains done in film. And I don't know that this was the best, but I like the fact that he's not being assisted by other villains to kind of build him up. In this case, you know, I'm a big supporter of one villain, good enough.
Well, exactly. And that's what I was hoping that, because in all the scenes where he was talking to himself, and I was almost expecting, oh God, he's going to have like a ghost or a supervillain possessing him or something like that. But he was just nuts, and he was just talking to himself.
Yeah,
it was just him,
or whatever was in the mirrors.
Yeah.
So. Oh man, those creepy mirrors.
Those mirrors were awesome.
Yeah.
Disney, you could take a hint with the Haunted Mansion with that one. Those were awesome. Okay, that was good. That
was, you gave yourself really the creeps, didn't you?
Oh God, yes. That was the only thing in the movie that gave me a creeps. And you know, I had to turn on the light when I got home to see into the bathroom, just to make sure. But yeah, that was one of the best effects. The effects I cannot complain about at all, and
yeah.
And really, I really just, you know, any complaints, it's just, it feels, especially, you know, comparing this to the last time I was at the theater with Tarzan, it's, you know, they're not like you know, amazingly well-written movies, but they're fun. And,
right.
you know, that's kind of what you want in this. So actually, you know, I mean, I know, you know, a lot can be said of the first movie and everything, but, you know, it's the first one suffers from a lot of similar problems in its own self. And it, if you don't have that Bill Murray Band-Aid over it, it would really, like, you could see, you would be able to see those scars. But, you know, Bill Murray just eclipses, and you're having so much fun with him in that first movie, certainly, and even in the second one to some degree, that you just sort of forgive it a lot of, like, of its weird stuff. Like, it's not until I watch it again sometimes where I'm like, oh, yeah, this is – why is everybody smoking?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, everybody is smoking in this movie. Yeah. And I don't mean, like, smoking hot, but no, there's no cigarettes in this movie.
Oh, God, no, because it's, you know, not proper etiquette anymore. God, if they just would have filmed it a couple months later, they could have had zombies playing Pokemon Go walking through Times Square and not even noticing the ghosts.
Yeah.
I have heard also, it didn't affect me this way, but I have heard also that, you know, women who have gone to this movie or certainly families that have taken their little girls to see this movie have very positive experiences, and that's a good thing. So even though it doesn't, you know, affect me directly, I'm happy for that.
Oh, right behind us at Aurora, plug, plug, plug for your theater, Alex.
Oh, we'll get to that soon enough.
Okay. There's this little girl and her mom and dad sitting right behind us, and she was gooing, and she was so excited during this whole movie. She loved everything. She's like, Dad, look. And, you know, and she now has role models. She has heroes that she could look up to.
And if it turns, you know, if we wind up with another great scientist out of it, more power to us.
Exactly.
I we've been talking for years about the lack of strong female characters, especially in lead roles, in some of our big tentpole films. Every time Black Widow gets to appear in one of the Marvel movies, we turn around and don't get an action figure for her. Or, you know, the idea that Frozen is talked about in such a great light because it has two sisters that show a bond for each other, which makes them strong characters. And this movie comes out and says, here are four really solid characters. And the handling of Leslie Jones's character being the, like, you guys understand the technology, but I know New York. And I can tell you why things are happening and you know, all this stuff. Was really smart because it shows that you don't just need to be book smart to get around in life, that you can have life experiences or you can learn outside of school and still be worth something.
And you can't teach that. You were waiting for that one, weren't you?
I wasn't planning on it, but I loved that it showed up.
Exactly.
Something I appreciated was how the film kind of focused on the friendship between the characters and didn't really bog down the story with, like, serious love interest for the characters. Not that that's bad all the time in movies, but I kind of like that they just let the story focus on the friendship and the work these women were doing. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Completely agree.
Exactly. You could tell the camaraderie between them, and it was good. So with that being said, any last thoughts before we go ahead and rate?
Well, I was going to mention this at the beginning of the discussion or whatever, but for those people who are longtime listeners and then wondering if we've ever covered the original Ghostbusters, actually, Mike, you did it before I joined the show in episode 16. So I don't think we've ever really properly done that. So maybe at some point.
I thought it was pretty properly done. Just because it was the previous co-host.
It was only two episodes before I joined. But I was like, man, have we never talked about this? And so,
Mike, sure you enough, just have to remember you missed it by that much.
Missed it by that much. But if anybody wants to, you know, hear the ESO discussion on the original Ghostbusters, you can listen to way back episode 16
from the year 2010.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow, gosh. I wonder if this internet thing's going to ever pick up.
It's a fad.
Exactly. All right, let's go about and rate this 1 out of 5 stars, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. Ashley, go ahead and go first.
I think I am going to, I would give the cast themselves a solid 4, but the movie, I think I'm going to have to give it a 3.5. It was fun. It was entertaining. It definitely did not deserve all of the flack and anger that it got online. But I thought the plot itself could have been pushed a little further. But like I said, I really liked the cast and it was fun. I had a good time at the theater, so it's one I would definitely recommend.
Fair enough. All right, Alex.
Cast a 4.5, CGI a 5, the movie all in all a 3.5. Again, you know, I smiled throughout. I had one moment that I really laughed out loud, and the rest of the time I just kind of – I waited for it to break out of itself, and it never got there. And I'm hoping that Ashley's right. I'm hoping that there's an R-rated version. If there was ever a movie that came out this year that needed 30 extra minutes and an R-rated cut, it's Ghostbusters. So I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Ghostbusters unrated.
Listening to interviews with Paul, he says there's a lot of improv stuff that is going to show up in the DVD. So
sweet. All right, which
will make it a must buy.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Go ahead, Mr. Mike.
I am going to go along with everybody else. It would be a 3 for me, a solid 3. Kate McKinnon gives it that extra little push to a 3.5. She just blew my socks off. I thought she was amazing in this. And I hope, you know, that there's another one. I hope this is the start of rebooting the franchise. And I would like to see in the next one them take the shackles off and just be crazy, because we know this cast can do it. We know this director can do it. And I think they might have been just playing it safe in this one. So let them loose in the next one. And that would be a Ghostbusters 2 I think we would all prefer to see.
Okay. That's gone wild.
Wow.
I don't even know how I could follow that one up.
They could bring back Kevin's designs.
And all the women's rights stuff gets set back 15 years. Yep.
Worth it. No, anyway.
One step forward, two steps back.
And there we go, folks. All right. I'm going to pretty much be online with everybody. I'm going to, if you went of what the ghosts look like, that'd be a 6 for me. I thought it was awesome. And story-wise, it was okay. I was smiling at bits. I liked the cameos. And I had to tell Judy after we were walking out that was Annie Potts. She was, that was?
Wow, the voice. I can't imagine you would misplay that voice.
What do you want? Yeah.
What do you want? She even had the same tone.
Oh, I know. And so I'm going to give it a 3.5 also. It's between a 3 and a 3.5, but I liked a lot of the characters, and I think, you know, Kate made it for me in this one. I liked almost every scene she was in. Mm-hmm. You didn't know what she was going to do next when she was playing with the torches and dancing through the lab.
Oh, yeah.
And setting the paper towels on fire. And it was just like, okay, she is insane.
She is making DeBarge cool.
Exactly.
I thought that was ABBA.
I thought that was Devo.
Devo.
That's what she says. I thought that was Devo.
And she was just showing her age there.
We were showing ours.
Exactly.
Because we knew.
So we want to hear from you guys. Please let us know. Write us at esopodcast@gmail.com. All right. Let's take a quick break. And we will be back again with the Con Report.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, This Geek Girl is doing another board game review. I'm going to be talking about the game Patchwork, a fantastic two-player game. Now, I love board games, but finding a good two-player game can be hard, since many games are better with more people. Patchwork fixes that in having a great two-player game that is challenging and has great replay value. And the sewing theme is fun, too, since I love to sew. In Patchwork, two players compete to build the most aesthetic and high-scoring patchwork quilt on a personal 9x9 game board. To start, players lay out all the pieces in a random circle and place the marker spool directly counterclockwise of the 2-1 patch. Each player takes 5 buttons, your currency and points of the game, and someone is chosen as the first player. During your turn, the players either purchase one of the 3 patches standing clockwise of the spool or passes. To purchase a patch, you pay the cost in buttons shown on that patch, advance your time token on the time track, the number of spaces equal to the time on the patch you just bought, and move the spool to the patch's location in the circle. Then add the patch to your game board. You can place it anywhere on the board that doesn't overlap another patch, but you probably want to try and smoosh them all together as tightly as possible. If your token is behind or on top of the other player's time token, then you get to take another turn. Otherwise, the opponent goes. Instead of purchasing a patch, you can choose to pass. To do this, you move your time token to the space immediately in front of your opponent's time token, and then take 1 button for each space that you just covered. In addition to a button cost and time cost, each patch also features a number of buttons on it. And when you move your time token past a button on the time track, you get all those buttons that are on your board. And then you put them in your bank. The time track also has 5 1x1 patches on it. Whoever passes those on the board first gets to take it, and then they immediately put it on their 9x9 board. Once both players are at the center, each player loses 2 buttons for each blank square that they have on their board. And whoever has the most buttons at the end of the game wins. So, I hope you are interested in the game Patchwork and you decide to check it out from this review. I'll be back next week on ESO with another episode. What will it be about? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out. Have a great week.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
This is the report where you can find out where ESO Network folks are going to be for the next couple months. And not a lot of dates left in July for us to do appearances at. But you can find Scott and Debbie Vigay at Dr. Geek Science Fair. That's in Celebration, Florida. That is July 30th. It is a free event. Free! You don't have to...
Free?
It won't cost you a thing. You have to get to Celebration, of course.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a little bit of a hop and a skip from Atlanta.
But we are very, very supportive of Scott's effort to make science entertaining. And he does a great job on his show, Dr. Geek's Lab. And the science fair is just an extension of that. So I definitely encourage everybody out there, especially if you got youngins, to make the trip to Celebration, Florida, and say howdy to Dr. Geek and learn science.
Science!
Absolutely. And then in August, there's the Atlanta Comic Convention. That is a one-day show. It is at the Atlanta Marriott Century Center. Frequent place for us to go. And the Atlanta Comic Convention is actually there it's 4 times a month, I think. Four times a year, that's right, because four times a year. So this will be the second to last one probably this year. And look, they're great one-day shows. You can find a bunch of great stuff in the back issue bins, a lot of sales on trades. You can even find some pop figures if Mike hasn't got to there first.
They're mine.
And there's great talent there, too. They do support local artists. So the award-winning friend of the station, Bobby Nash, will be there with a table, as well as many other folks that have been on the station as well. So, and Mike and I will be there in some form. We'll be walking around looking for deals, bothering people, et cetera, et cetera. So we don't have a table there, but if you want to meet up with us, please reach out to us before the convention so we can make sure that we're there when you're there. So
I have an announcement to make about the show, actually.
What's that?
I have an announcement to make about the show.
about the Atlanta Comic Convention?
Yes, we will have an appearance of William the Wonder Boy.
William the Wonder Boy.
Yes. Well, he's become a Wonder Man, actually.
Is he in costume?
He's debating if he's going to come in costume because he says Oogie Boogie is just a little too hot for the summer.
It's true. That is a hot costume. But you will see costumes there. Cosplay is encouraged as well. So, but that is August 14th. August 19th is the monthly Speakeasy Electro Swing at the Red Light Cafe in Atlanta, Georgia. And, of course, our good friend Dr. Q will be spinning the tunes there and working the show. He's been showing videos of the event, and it looks like a lot of fun. So check it out. And then the reason that there's not a lot of shows with ESO people in it for this month and next month is we're all really just resting up and preparing for Dragon Con. In September 2nd through the 5th, it is Labor Day weekend. It's the big mama, the big daddy, the big shoe. Well, it's the big shoe. Yes, I did that.
You never bitch about me doing any wrestling themes ever again, sir.
But it is one of our favorite events to do every year. And this year it looks to be no exception. It looks like it's going to be a very special one. They are celebrating their 30th anniversary. We've had a lot of fun talking about it on the ESO Dragon Con Report. So please listen to those if you have not already done so. If you want to find out more about the show in general, or specifically the show this year, because there are a lot of changes. So we have been trying to cover as many of those as possible. And on our next recording, in fact, we're already preparing to report on some other changes that have just come through the wire. So in any case, it is a great event. We hope to see you guys there. And that's about it. So if you are going to be in any of those events, please reach out to us and let us know, because we like meeting our listeners. And if you have a convention of your own that you want us to help promote, please reach out to us. We also like helping out with panels and traveling to different shows. So if you want us to participate, please reach out. And if you've got a convention that you've been to this summer that you just want the world to know about, please contact us, because we always love talking about conventions.
All right, let's just close this puppy up.
I'm just glad we can do it respectfully.
I think we did it quite respectfully.
Absolutely.
I did.
Good job, team.
Yay, team.
And it gave the whole movie just ones, just because we're men.
Exactly. Awesome. Hey, we didn't even talk about, you know, all the pinups that Kevin was doing at the end of the movie.
Oh, God.
Hey, Kevin. When I got back home from seeing the movie, I went online, and the first comment that I saw in IMDb regarding the movie was that it was a piece of crap, and it was a piece of man-hating crap. And I was like, this is not man-hating.
No, this was not man-hating at all.
This is not a man-hating movie. I'm like, I don't know what you
I've seen the man-hating movies.
Trust me. Me too. Yeah. I mean, I was not sitting there going, I'm so embarrassed to be here.
Judy even was like, she started whispering to me, I'm getting kind of bored with this, you know. So,
you know, I wasn't bored, but
she was, but you know, each their own.
Yeah.
All right, 3, 2. So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank our crew for being here. We made it through another movie, guys. And Ashley, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be back.
Anything you want to shout out about?
Tonight, I guess I'd just like to give out a shout out to the great fans that are a part of the ESO network. Kind of surrounding the discussion about Ghostbusters, you know, I just read a lot of angry and kind of hateful comments online that people were directing to each other. But one of the things I really appreciate about the ESO Facebook group is that even when people disagree, the discussion is always respectful, and it's kind of a safe place to share ideas and really talk about our passion for geek stuff. So if you're not a part of those Facebook groups, definitely get signed up. There's a great bunch of people.
Awesome. We could always use more folks there. We're on a striving for 1,000 people by Christmas.
Unless you're going to be a jerkhole, then we don't want you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. go to there's a couple other groups I can
maybe,
name.
Maybe that's why our group is, maybe that's why our group is so small.
Yeah, that's why we haven't reached 1,000 yet, because we don't want jerks.
Exactly.
Damn it.
They're all a Nerdist. Got it. Okay. Alex, thank you, sir.
It's always a pleasure to be on, man. I love talking movies, and I love getting to talk with the three of you about movies, because even when we disagree in a great way, and it makes for fascinating conversation.
I can't wait for next week's podcast, then. How's that for foreshadowing?
Yeah, that's some foreshadowing right there.
Oh, Alex, it's awesome. It is always great. Anything you want to shout out about that?
I never come on the show to shamelessly plug, and today I'm going to shamelessly plug. If any of our listeners are in the Roswell area this Saturday night, the 23rd of July, perhaps after seeing Star Trek Beyond, my theater, the Aurora Cineplex, is doing a special showing at midnight as part of their Aurora After Hours program of Galaxy Quest. And we are doing it as we're actually going to turn our entire lobby area from 10 to midnight into a science fiction convention to kind of give that vibe. And I would really love it if the ESO faithful in the Atlanta area would come out. We're going to try to do a special tribute before the movie or maybe after the movie for Alan Rickman.
Awesome. So come dressed as Alan Rickman and you get a prize from Alex.
Something like that, sure. We are inviting costumes. We are inviting geeky T-shirts and whatnot. But come out and kind of have a pre-convention vibe for only like $9 for a movie ticket, and then get to see a really terrific film.
That's awesome.
This Saturday night at midnight.
Yay! Cool. It's definitely a great theater. It's one of my favorite places to go.
Me too.
All right, Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
I do. We have to give a shout out to Van Allen Plexico and the White Rocket Podcast. He has reached Happy 100. He is a 100th episode, made its debut today. And for his anniversary episode, he decided that he would get some folks, anybody, listeners, guests, et cetera, to record some segments about his show. And I was happy to participate in that as well. And look, we're really proud to have him on our network. And he does great stuff. And here's hoping we see 100 more from him.
That is awesome.
And if you haven't checked out his new podcast, the Avengers Assemble podcast, that's really awesome as well.
Coming soon to the ESO network.
Yes. That's awesome to hear.
Yes. I just need to sit down with Van and actually teach him how to use the website so he can put his stuff up there. That is awesome, though. It's always great when one of our podcasts actually make it to an anniversary.
Yeah, I mean, we all know. We've been into a rhythm so long. But still, it's an effort. And Van does three podcasts now. He does the White Rocket podcast. He does his college football podcast, and now he's added the Avengers Assemble one. So
lightweight,
I know, but I mean, still, that's all on him, you know, and it's not easy. So congratulations to him for his persistence, if nothing else. But it's also entertaining. I mean, he's a great writer and a great host. I love his discussions. His Game of Thrones episodes and his James Bond episodes are awesome.
That is awesome. All right. I got a shout out to the people of Canada for not killing me. It was awesome. I had a blast in Canada this last week. I was up there for a conference and then to work up with my Toronto counterparts with my company. And it was just a blast. And right before I left, the people in my office said, "Hey, let's go out for poutine." And for those who don't know what poutine is basically a Quebecan treat that the lumberjacks used to make to keep themselves warm. It is basically fried potatoes covered in mushroom gravy and then adding sour cream, bacon, and whatever else you can think that they throw on top of it. basically a heart attack waiting to happen.
It sounds like it.
And so we went out for poutine for lunch.
There's a reason that Canadians have awesome healthcare.
Exactly.
They need it.
They need it. Oh my God. I actually went for the light version and I just got poutine with potatoes, bacon, and maple syrup. Oh, and cheese curd. Oh. I forgot the important part. The cheese curd. Oh my God. I was eating it and I just had to hit my chest a couple times. And I actually asked to borrow the paddles on the airplane ride home once or twice. Excuse me. Okay, I'm breathing. It's good. But it was a great adventure. Toronto is an awesome city. If you have never been, do go. There is just so much going on in that city. It's awesome. And I'm already looking forward to my next trip up, which will probably be September, November through November sometime. It should be interesting to see, and maybe Judy can come along this time. So it should be a lot of fun. All right. With that being said and done, we want to hear from you guys. Please give us a call at 404-963-9057. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on Ghostbusters. What did you think? Or, of course, you could always write us at esopodcast@gmail.com. And before we get out of here, we always have to shill and say, please buy something off of our ESO podcast store, off of Amazon. And, you know, Amazon just had their, what was it? Their Prime member day last week.
Yeah, it was on Prime Day.
And it was amazing, the deals you could find. And we had a lot of those up on the ESO store. And looking at our sales, some people bought stuff. Thank you. We do appreciate you.
Thank you.
That, you know, keeps us the high caliber of guests like Alex and, you know, Ashley here. It is always a good thing. So, you know, that helps us, you know, survive, and as we like to say. And speaking of surviving, they're going to be back again next week. We're going to the movies, and we are going to look at Star Trek Beyond, the third film of the reboot series.
Yep.
And should be interesting to see what we thought. Hopefully it'll be better than the last one, because I know Mr. Mike stormed out of there fuming.
And I enjoyed the hell out of it.
He always likes it when I fume.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It is. I almost expected him to say flame on. You know, that's how bad he was. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, we will see you then next week. It's always been great to talk to you guys, and we'll see you here next week on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace. And we're done.
You've been listening to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com eStore, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace.
That's it. The show's over. It's time to head home. See you next week here at Earth Station One.
Bye, bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.